You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 99 by Rudolf Steiner, 14 lectures entitled Rosicrucian Wisdom, translated by Joanna Collis. This is Lecture 2 entitled The Ninefold Constitution of the Human Being, given in Munich on May 25th, 1907. In the previous lecture, we spoke of the kind of relationship Rosicrucianism adopts toward the human being and culture in general. Although actual knowledge concerning the higher worlds can be discovered only by the seer, by more highly developed spiritual faculties, nevertheless, the Rosicrucian method is such that the wisdom it imparts can be understood by the logical intellect. The knowledge itself is discovered by a seer with higher faculties, but normal human reason is capable of comprehending it. Let it not be imagined, however, that what it is possible to say in a single lecture can hold its own against all criticism. This could only be so if the statements were put to the test by all the means accessible to the human mind. In the last lecture, we also spoke about another characteristic of Rosicrucianism, namely that this method aims at carrying spiritual science into practical life. That is why things are expressed here in such a way that they can be made an integral part of life. Here, too, you must have patience. For initially it will seem as though many things are inapplicable in practical life, but when you are able to survey the whole, you will realize that what I have said is true. The Rosicrucian method of investigation is able to impart wisdom that can take effect in life. First of all, we will consider the several members of which the human being consists. Only by advancing step by step and omitting nothing shall we be able to get a view of the organic whole. We shall also study the destiny of the human soul after death, and the human being in waking consciousness, in sleep, and in death. We shall have to consider what is accomplished by human beings between death and a new birth. It is a widespread view that they are inactive after death, but the contrary is the case. They have to be intensely active to create, to perform work that is important for the cosmos. We shall also have to speak of reincarnation and karma, of destiny in human evolution, of how humanity developed in times gone by, and of evolution in the future. Today it will be my task to give a brief description of the constitution and nature of the human being. We must realize that the nature and being of man appear far more complex to spiritual perception than to ordinary sense perception, which is interwoven with intellect and can only observe a very small portion of human nature as a whole. From the esoteric point of view, the physical body as we see it before us is permeated by the ether and astral bodies. These three bodies are united, and only when the other two are removed do we have the real physical body before us. The physical body is that member which the human being has in common with the whole of physical nature, consisting of minerals, plants, and animals. The only correct view of the physical body is to say that it corresponds with the extent of the human being's kinship with the surrounding mineral kingdom. But you must realize that this member of the human being is the one that can least of all be conceived of as separate from the cosmos. The forces working in the physical body pour in from the cosmos. Think of a rainbow. If a rainbow is to appear, there must be a particular combination of sunlight, rain clouds, and so on. The rainbow cannot be absent if this combination between sunlight and rain clouds exists. The rainbow is, therefore, a consequence, a phenomenon, brought into being from without. The physical body, too, is, in a way, a pure phenomenon. You must look in the whole surrounding universe for the forces which hold the physical body together. Where can we find, in their true form, these forces that cause the physical body to have the appearance it has? The answer leads us into higher worlds. For in the physical world we see the physical body as a phenomenon only. The forces that give rise to this phenomenon lie in a very lofty spiritual world. We must therefore give some study to worlds that exist as truly as the physical world exists. When spiritual researchers speak of higher worlds, they mean worlds that are around us all the time. Only the senses for perceiving them must be opened, just as the eyes must be opened for the perception of colors. When certain senses of the soul, senses that lie a degree higher than the physical senses, are opened, the world around us is pervaded by a new revelation known as the astral world. Rosicrucian theosophy, or wisdom, calls this world the imaginative world, but imaginative, in quotes, here denotes something much more real than that word normally implies. There is a constant flowing and ebbing of pictures. Colors that are otherwise chained to objects are involved in myriad transformations within the astral world. In the movement that has linked itself with Rosicrucianism, this world is also called the elemental world. These three expressions, therefore, imaginative world, astral world, elemental world, are interchangeable. A still loftier world, revealed to yet higher senses, is that of the, quote, harmonies of the spheres, close quote. This higher world penetrates into the world of pictures and colors. It is called Devakan, Rupa Devakan, or also the mental world. In Rosicrucian terminology, it is known as the world of the harmonies of the spheres, or the world of inspiration. Because musical sound is the medium of inspiration when the corresponding senses have been opened. In the movement that has linked itself with Rosicrucianism, this world has been called the heaven world, lower or Rupa Devakanic world, Devakan, the world of inspiration, the heaven world. These again are one and the same. An even higher world, revealed by yet higher senses, is known in Rosicrucianism as the world of true intuition. But intuition here has a much higher reality than is contained in the word as used in everyday life. True intuition is a merging into other beings, so that they are known from within themselves. In the movement that has linked itself with Rosicrucianism, this world of intuition has been called the world of reason. It is so far above the ordinary world that it casts only a shadow image into the world of human beings. Intellectual concepts are faint and feeble shadow images of the realities in this higher world. So, in addition to the physical world, there are three other worlds. Behind the forces which hold the physical world together, there are forces that are to be found in the highest world, the world of intuition. In comparison with the beings and forces in this highest world, everything that the physicist discovers in the physical world is like so many faint shadow images. For every concept you have, say, of a crystal or of the human eye, EYE, you would find living entities in this highest world. The concept in the physical world is the shadow image of entities in this highest world. Thus the physical world is built up of forces which manifest in their true form in Arupa Devakan, to use the theosophical mode of expression. We can form a still clearer conception if we think about the mineral kingdom from this point of view. The human being has a consciousness of the ego, I consciousness. We say that a mineral is without consciousness, but this is true only on the physical plane. In the higher worlds, the mineral is not without consciousness. You will not, however, find the ego of the mineral world in the elemental world. The ego consciousness of the mineral lies in the highest of the worlds of which we have spoken. Just as your finger has no consciousness of its own, for its consciousness lies in your I, capital, or ego, so the mineral is connected with its ego by currents that lead into the very highest realm of world existence. A fingernail is part of the human organism as a whole. Its consciousness is in the I or ego. A fingernail is related to the organism as the mineral is related to the highest spiritual world. There is one I or ego belonging to the whole living organism, and the nails, like the mineral, are an outermost manifestation of what is hardened within this life. The human physical body has this in common with the minerals, that the physical body, insofar as it is purely physical, has a consciousness belonging to it in the spiritual world above. Inasmuch as the human being is endowed with purely physical consciousness, although he does not know it, inasmuch as he has a physical body with its consciousness in a higher world, his constitution is such that the physical body is worked upon from above. What fashions your physical body is not under your control. Just as it is the I or ego that moves your hand, so is your physical body worked upon from a higher world. And the ego consciousness belonging to the physical body gives rise to the physical processes of the body. The initiate who attains to intuition is the only one who has such power over his physical body that no current passes through its nerves without his knowledge. Not until an individual reaches this stage can he be a companion of those spiritual beings up there who govern and direct his physical body. The human being has his second member, the ether body or life body, in common with the plants and animals. It is visible to the seer and has approximately the same form as the physical body. It is a body of forces. If you could think away the physical body, the ether body would be left as a body of forces, a body permeated with lines of force that have built up the physical body. The human heart could never have assumed the form it bears if there were not in the ether body an etheric heart. This etheric heart contains certain forces and currents, and these are the builders, the architects, the molders of the physical heart. Suppose you had a vessel containing water, and you were to cool the water until hardenings, ice formations, appeared in it. The ice is water, only the water is hardened, and the shapes of the ice blocks were already within the water as lines of force. Thus is the physical heart formed out of the etheric heart. It is simply a hardened etheric heart, and the streams of force in the etheric heart have given the physical heart its shape. If you could think away the physical body, you would see that the etheric body, especially in the upper parts, is fairly similar to the physical body. This similarity, however, continues only as far as the middle of the body, for there is also a great difference compared with the physical body. You will understand what this is when I tell you that the ether body in a man is female, and in a woman, male. Without this knowledge, much will remain incomprehensible in everyday life. Another characteristic is that the ether body appears like a form of light extending slightly beyond the shape of the physical body. The human being has the ether body in common with the plants. The situation of the ether body resembles that of the physical body. The forces that hold the ether body together are found in the world of inspiration, the world of Rupa Devakan, the heaven world. All the forces that hold the ether body together lie one stage lower than those that hold the physical body together. So you must also expect to find the ego consciousness of the plants in this world of inspiration, of lower Devakan, of the harmonies of the spheres. In this same world, too, lies the ego consciousness that pervades the human ether body and lives within you without your being aware of it. We now come to the third member, the astral body, the soul body, in quotes, in Rosicrucian terminology. We have our astral body in common with the animals only. The astral body is the bearer of feeling, of happiness and suffering, joy and pain, emotions and passions, wishes and desires too, are anchored in the astral body. The astral body must be characterized by saying that there is within it something that is also present in the animal world. The animal world, too, has a consciousness. The astral body of man and of the animal is held together by forces which have their seat in the world of imagination, or the elemental world in Rosicrucian parlance. The forces that hold the astral body together and give it the form it has can be perceived in their true shape in the astral world. The ego consciousness of the animal is also within this astral world. While, in the case of a human being, we speak of an individual soul, in the case of an animal we speak of a group soul, which is to be found on the astral plane. We must not think here of the single animal living on the physical plane, a whole animal species, all lions, all tigers, has an ego in common, which can be found as a group soul on the astral plane. So the animal is really only comprehensible when it can be followed upward to the astral plane. Strands, in quotes, as it were, go forth from the lions, for example. And in the astral world unite into the group soul that is common to the individual lions living on the earth. Just as the human being has an individual ego, so in every astral body there lives something of a group ego. This animal ego lives in a human astral body, and the human being does not become independent of this animal ego until he develops astral sight and becomes a companion of astral beings. When the group souls of the animals confront him on the astral plane, as individual animals confront him here. In the astral world, there are beings who can only come down to the physical plane in fragments, as it were, divided up into individual animals. When the life of these animals comes to an end, they unite in the astral world with the rest of this astral being. A whole species of animals is a single being on the astral plane. A being with whom converse can be held as with an individual here on earth. Although there is no exact similarity, the group souls are not incorrectly characterized in the second seal of the Apocalypse, where they are divided into four classes, lion, eagle, bull, man, that is, the human being who has not yet descended to the physical plane. These four apocalyptic animals are the four classes of group soul, which are closest to the human being in his individual soul on the astral plane. Let us now turn to what the human being does not have in common with the world around him, the being expressed in the I, or ego. By virtue of this fourth member, the human being is the crown of physical creation. This fourth member is what has consciousness here on the physical plane. Just as mineral consciousness is in the world of Arupa Devakan, plant consciousness in Rupa Devakan, and animal consciousness on the astral plane, so is human ego consciousness in the physical world. In his I or ego, the human being has something into which no other being or center of consciousness intrudes. Thus we have the fourfold human being, physical man, etheric man, astral man, and ego or I. This does not, however, comprise the whole of human nature. Human beings had these four members in their very first incarnation on the earth, and as they pass through successive incarnations, further development takes place. They work from their ego upon the three other members. In the remote past, during their first incarnation on earth, Human beings were entirely under the sway of every emotion and desire. Although they had an ego, they behaved as animals behave. The difference between a wild individual and a highly evolved idealist lies in the fact that the former has not yet worked from his ego upon his astral body. The next step in evolution is for human beings to work on their astral body. The result of such work is that certain fundamental properties of the astral body are brought under the individual's own control. The average European allows himself to follow certain impulses and forbids himself to yield to others. The part of his astral body that an individual has managed to bring under the control of the ego is what we call the spirit self, or manas. Manas is a product of the transformation of the astral body by the ego. In its substantiality, spirit self is identical with the astral body. There is merely a different ordering of what was originally in the astral body, but has been transformed into spirit self. An individual whose development progresses acquires the faculty not only of working upon his astral body, but also of working from the ego upon his ether body. Let us be clear about the difference between working upon the astral body and working upon the ether body. Think of what we know at the age, say, of 8, and what we have learned since then. Obviously, we have learned a great deal. Every individual has assimilated a vast number of concepts and ideas which cause him no longer to follow his emotions and passions blindly. But someone who remembers having a violent temper as a child and then thinks of how far this violent temper has been conquered will find that it is still apt to break out. Again, it is rare for those who once had a bad memory to succeed in fundamentally improving it, or to succeed in changing character traits, such as, for example, altering the strength or weakness of their conscience. I have often compared the changes people can bring about in their temperament and the like with the slow progress of the hour hand of a clock. The essential characteristic of the pupil's initiation is this: learning is regarded as a mere preparation. Much more is done for initiation when the temperament itself is transformed. If a feeble memory has been changed into a strong one, if violence has been changed into gentleness, a melancholic temperament into serenity, more has been accomplished than the acquisition of great learning. Herein lies a source of inner esoteric powers, for this indicates that the ego is working upon the ether body, not only upon the astral body. Insofar as they express themselves, these qualities are to be found in the astral body, but if they are to be transformed, this must happen in the ether body. Whatever the ego has transformed in the ether body is present in the human being as life spirit, in contrast to life body. In theosophical literature, life spirit is called buddhi. The substantiality of buddhi is nothing else than that part of the ether body that has been transformed by the ego. When the ego becomes so strong that it is able not only to transform the ether body, but also the physical body, the densest of the principles in the human being, the forces of which extend into the very highest world, we say that an individual is developing what is at present the very highest member of his being, spirit man, or Atma. The forces for the transformation of the physical body lie in the highest world of all. The transformation of the physical body begins with the transformation of the breathing process, for Atma is breath. This transformation causes changes in the constitution of the blood, which works upon the physical body. The human being is here working upward into the very highest worlds. Transformation can proceed in two ways, and to be precise, we must speak of an unconscious and a conscious transformation. In reality, every European working from the ego has unconsciously transformed the lower members of his being. In the present phase of evolution, he worked consciously only in respect of developing spirit self, manas, and he must be an initiate if he wants to learn to transform his ether body consciously. Thus we, and even the most primitive human beings, in the very earliest stage of evolution, have the three original members, and within these the ego. Then began the process of transformation. For long ages it proceeded unconsciously, but now humanity as a whole is beginning consciously to transform the astral body. Initiates, meanwhile, are consciously transforming the ether body. And in the future, all human beings will consciously transform the ether body and the physical body. The three primeval members of our being are physical body, ether body, astral body, and then the I, the ego. First, the ego brings about transformation. First, it transforms these three members, a process that for present-day humanity lies in the past. Unconsciously, it brought about as germinal realities the sentient soul, intellectual soul, and consciousness soul. Rosicrucian theosophy, or wisdom, makes the following distinction. Sentient soul, intellectual soul, consciousness soul. The conscious process of transformation lights up for the first time in the consciousness soul. At this point, the ego begins to work consciously at the transformation. First of all, spirit self is developed in the astral body. In the ether body, the life spirit is developed as a counterpart to the life body. And then in the physical body, the actual spirit man, Atma, is developed. Thus, there are in all 9 members of our nature. Outwardly regarded, 2 of these members, sentient soul and soul body, are as though one inside the other, like a sword in its sheath. The sentient soul is within the soul body, so that they appear as one. It is similar with spirit self and consciousness soul. These 9 members are thus reduced to 7. Number 1, physical body. Number 2, ether or life body. Number 3, astral body, within which is the sentient soul. Number 4, ego. And the higher members. Number 5, spirit self, manas, together with the consciousness soul. Number 6, life spirit, buddhi, and as the highest, number 7, spirit man, atma. Such is the inner constitution of the human being, who has in reality 9 members, although in 2 cases, 2 of these coincide. Therefore, the Rosicrucian method speaks of 3 times 3 equals 9 members, which is reduced to 7 because those 2 pairs coincide. We must, however, recognize the 9 within the 7, otherwise we shall reach only a theoretical conception. The transition from theory to reality can only be made by a study of the human being's essential nature. Number 9, spirit man. Number 8, life spirit. Number 7, spirit self. Number 6, consciousness soul. Number 5, intellectual soul. Number 4, sentient soul. Number 3, astral body. Number 2, life, ether body. Number 1, physical body. The I or ego lights up in the soul, and then the work on the bodies begins. We can only make the transition from theory to real life if we look closely at the nature of the situation. The indications given today will be a guide to us tomorrow, when we shall study the human being in sleep, in waking consciousness, and in death. The end of Lecture 2.